Hey, Sports Talk Garage, this is Matt. Guys, you need to take a close look in the mirror at your nose and ears. There's some weird hairs growing there, and you probably haven't noticed, but your lady certainly has. Guys, did you know that 79% of partners polled admit that long nose hair is a major turnoff? Manscaped has just released the Weed Whacker to handle that situation for you. Let's be honest, yanking them out with your fingers can hurt worse than nicking the boys. Ladies, if you're listening in, this is just a product needed to take care of those unsightly hairs and makes a great gift, whether you're trying to tell them in a straight out fashion or just for a random gift that you love them. It has a 9,000 RPM rotary dual blade system to fix all of those hairs needing to go away quickly. Same as the mower 3.0, it's rechargeable and waterproof. Get 20% off plus free shipping using the code podcast20 at manscaped.com.
Welcome to the Sports Talk Garage Podcast, where we discuss and debate the latest news and hot takes from the court and the ball fields to the locker room and front office. We are four lifelong friends who grew up with a love of professional and collegiate sports. Today, we are bankers, investors, professors, and entrepreneurs, but our love of sports has never changed. Come listen for the fun, gain some insight, and probably a few laughs as we give you our perspective on those oversized contracts, game-winning scores, and franchise players. This is the Sports Talk Garage.
Hey, Sports Talk Garage podcast listeners. This is your host, Matt, with our normal array of hosts. David and John are here with me today. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Oh, wonderful. It's only Monday, but it's been a busy week. It feels like last week just kept on rolling into this one, but it's happy to take a few minutes off, talk some sports, and just relax a little bit.
Absolutely. John, yeah. How are you doing? It's been a little bit.
Same for me. Yeah, it's been crazy times. It seems like it's just getting crazier and crazier by the day. But I'm holding on there, strapped in tight, and just hanging on for the ride. So good to be back talking sports and have a not my normal setup tonight by any stretch of the imagination. So hope you don't hear too much background noise, but we're making do.
Absolutely. Well, with that, welcome to season 2, episode 43, The Comeback. So as we take a look at sports kind of starting to wind back up, I know we've talked a little bit about this, a little bit of NASCAR, a little bit of NBA. Now we're kind of starting to see athletes actually start showing up for colleges on campus. We're seeing kind of some final craziness happen through the NFL, and Major League Baseball's back. So let's talk a little bit about college. College athletes are starting to report in now, right, guys? Yeah. That's kind of what's going on.
Slowly showing up right now. Yeah.
So because of that, and I'm sorry, John, you were kind of saying something there.
Oh, no, I was just saying it's that time of the year, you know, where we're trying to get back into a little bit of normalcy, but it seems like, you know, this virus wants to slow things down again and keep us from getting there. But yeah, I mean, they're trying to push forward as best they can.
Right. And for those of you out there listening that, maybe you played a college sport, maybe you didn't, or not aware, usually what we would see is spring football pick up where they kind of have their own camp for a couple different, about 2 weeks maybe. And at the end of that, they'll have a spring game, which is generally ones versus ones, ones versus two. So the first stringers versus second stringers. And they're really just looking for, you know, how did players develop during the off season for all those guys who've been working their butts off in the weight room, running, eating plans, all these various things that they're supposed to be working on. And they're looking for what's next year going to look like. They know that the freshmen are coming in. Some high schoolers will even finish at the end of the semester. And instead of going through the end of their senior year, they'll show up for spring football for the spring semester. So now, because they weren't really able to have that, we're looking at the NCAA giving a little bit of leniency on letting the players come in early, try and get some work in with these guys outside of just maybe some lifting. So here's the problem. Now we've got all these athletes on, as John said, Rona has reared her ugly head once again, and we're starting to see some positive testing in multiple athletes per team. Let's talk, guys, a little bit about what that impact might look like.
OK, Gosh, it's kind of crazy thinking about the number of athletes. Like LSU had 30. I think Clemson's up to 37. Texas at 13. Kansas State 14. And then so it's like Houston, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Auburn, Iowa State, and more have all had multiple people testing positive for this. Now, obviously, some people will not be as bad as others in terms of symptoms. Some people might be asymptomatic, but still no positive result here. And you got to wonder, you know, in college, you go to class, you go to your dorm, you go to practice, you're with your team, you're with a bunch of people. How do you kind of sequester these athletes off to themselves? And you know, I've seen a number of different scenarios, especially working out of college. I've been involved in a lot of ideas and planning for what a fall semester looks like just on the academic side. I can't imagine trying to think of a football team or a volleyball team or any fall sport, really, how they're going to keep players, you know, by themselves, kind of like as a little family unit, as many people are doing right now, just mainly seeing family. That's essentially what's going to need to happen. And there's got to be so many scenarios running through, you know, the coaches, the athletic directors. It's kind of what is the best option here so we can actually, you know, get some games going this fall.
So, John, let's just say, for example, you know, you're an athlete, you're getting ready to walk into camp. You're at the top of your game. Let's say that you're walking into your junior year. How do you feel right now walking into this situation as guys are starting to test positive? You have NFL prospect, a lot of good things, but you have to have this season to make a big difference.
Well, I mean, that's the issue is that, you know, you've got hundreds of guys that are, you know, working to make a team. And I mean, insane more trying to in multiple sports, men and women. So you got those people that are, hey, I may be a pro next year and I'm 12 months away from getting, you know, drafted to the NFL or whatever the case may be. And then you got other guys that, you know, they play ball to have fun and, you know, maybe they're on the practice squad. Maybe they're, maybe they're special teams types guys, something like that. Someone's not getting a lot of playing time and they're just having fun with this stuff. They're not a scholarship guy, something like that. So how you manage and when you've got, you know, the college is unique that none of these guys are getting paid, and whether a guy is getting ready to go pro or whether he just is out there having a good time, none of them are getting paid for any of this stuff. And so you're asking these guys to show up and you're trying to treat them equally, whether they're a superstar or whether they're just having fun. And the question comes out, like I read, you know, I think it was yesterday at the Chicago Tribune was talking about, you know, what happens. Apparently a lot of schools are forcing these college kids to sign documentation saying that they'll disclose any type of, you know, symptoms and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the question was, can they even legally do that? This, you know, none of these guys, again, are getting paid. Can you legally require them to sign documentation? Mm-hmm. How does that violate HIPAA laws when any of this could be discoverable in a court setting? So, you know, if I'm a junior and I'm healthy and I'm, you know, got a chance to go pro, then I've got a very, very different outlook on this than a guy that's just having a good time and, you know, just, you know, looks at this as, hey, yeah, I have a chance to play some college ball. Like, you know, that's a great story to tell kind of guy.
Okay, so real quick, David, mm-hmm. Let's put you in the coaching position. Yeah. So now that we've looked at the athlete side, you now have to sit down and look at your roster. You have, let's say, 80 guys reporting in for this summer pileup. Now you're getting major key players that are going to have to drop out due to COVID. Are you looking at the freshmen? Are you looking at these sophomores that have not quite developed yet? I mean, what does that look like to you if you think, if I'm putting you in the coaching spot?
I mean, first and foremost, you got to keep the health and safety of your athletes as a number one priority over winning. Because if somebody's getting sick beyond just, you know, broken bones, but if they come down with a virus, that's deadly. I mean, that's way worse. So every precaution has to be taken. But if one of your key players does get this, I mean, they're going to be quarantined for, you know, a week or two until they're asymptomatic, all the tests come back negative. Yeah, some freshmen may burn some red shirts, and that might put you behind talent-wise in a game. I guess the leveling playing field here is that all the other schools that you're going to be playing are somewhat in the same boat. Yeah, some cities and states that have a higher density might be a little worse than others, but every school is still dealing with this issue. So you might lose your star running back. Well, the team you're playing next week might lose their star receiver. So there's a little bit of leveling here. However, you got to think long-term, be still redshirt a guy you just made this year, like, hey, you know what, if we lose this year, the AD is going to understand my job's not in question here. I want to do what's best for my players and teach them how to deal with adversity. And that's where I would go instead of just, you know, we got to go for that win. We got to get it to the bowl game. I think everybody would understand if this year is not what it's supposed to be. People are going to be happy to have sports back. And if you lose a game, it might be okay because it's there and you're still keeping the health of your athletes as a number one priority.
Interesting. So I like the way you put that. And now my brain is almost tracking on the, as you said, if I lose somebody, the other team's probably lost somebody. Instead of losing people to injury, how interesting is it going to look this season when you've got a star player down for 2 weeks? Because they're, I mean, let's be honest. We're talking about the guys that are, again, top of their game, top of the healthiest they're ever going to be because they're working really hard. Their bodies are in tune. Hopefully their staff is throwing the players on whatever they can vitamin-wise, or, you know, I don't know what the NCAA restrictions are on that, but hey guys, make sure you're taking these things to help your immune system fight, because if you're going to get it, at least fight out quicker. So it's like, hey, you've got top 10 teams losing this star guy for 2 weeks. Then he comes back. Well, the next team loses it. I mean, you can almost forget having that 10-0 type of run. And you're now looking at who's just going to have the best playoff stance.
Yeah, I mean, it could be somewhat like March Madness, you know, whoever's hot at the time in basketball might win the tournament. Well, this could be, you know, what powerhouse might lose players and don't have that perfect season. And some group of five team comes out with an undefeated season, and it could be very interesting at the end of the season and seeing what that top 25 is going to look like.
For sure. Okay. Moving on a little bit, let's talk a little more about football. Dak Prescott getting quite, well, I guess let's put it this way. He's been putting this off for a while, right? Hasn't signed a contract, has kind of refused based on a few different factors, but now they're franchise tagging him for a whopping $31.4 million.
A lot of money.
I mean, it's the Dallas Cowboys, right? Like they
a lot of friggin' money.
But you're kind of killing yourself on a quarterback that doesn't sound like he necessarily wants to be there. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. What does that mean to you guys when you look at the team as a whole? Is it worth it for Dak to get that or not?
I love it. I love it mainly because he stuck it to Jerry Jones, and not many people get to do that on the financial side of things. I mean, the man's worth $7.9 billion, so he obviously knows what he's doing. But yeah, Dak was looking for roughly $45 million a year, and they was being offered about $35 million, a five-year, $175 million deal, which is an amazing deal, but it's not what he wanted. And for those who don't know, the franchise tag in the NFL is essentially the top five salaries of that position averaged, or 120% of that player's previous year salary, whichever is higher, which is why it's so much money. I mean, the last few years he's made under 1 million the last 4 years until 2019 when he made 2 million. So yeah, it's a big jump, but it's essentially him betting on himself. And I mean, if he has a great year, he can leave. Somebody else can sign him. He's not stuck being a Cowboy. And Jerry Jones, you know, he's looking for a new quarterback at that time. So I love that Dak Prescott bet on himself and he's going to get the big contract.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I like your analogy that he kind of stuck it to Jerry, because the ball literally, I feel like, was in his court. Mm-hmm. Clearly the Cowboys have shown their hand in the game of poker, and they've made multiple attempts to try to get this signed. So clearly they want him to be there long-term. So he really, at least at this point in time, has all the power. And, you know, someone has just said, listen, just pay the guy what he wants, because the issue is that all it takes is one other – and granted, I don't think that he's – I personally don't think he's deserving of the money he's getting, but there's a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL I don't think are deserving of the money they're getting, and that just seems to be – that's the going rate right now. So – it doesn't really matter. That's kind of, you know, not even a talking point. Is if you are a starting quarterback in the NFL, and you're approaching a second deal, then this is the money that, you know, the market says you should be paid, whether, you know, us common people feel like that's the case or not. And I'm sure a lot of Cowboys fans would have a strong opinion one way or the other on this as well, based on their records the last few years. But, I mean, everyone has been saying in the media, just pay the guy what he wants, because all it takes is one other of these big guys to get a pay bump and to get some kind of extension. And now the market value goes up
even for everybody. More.
So every single time that, you know, Jerry tries to pull a fast one and say, ah, well, you know, I'll tag you, but I'm not paying you, you know, whatever it is more you want, you know, he's next year, he's going to have to pay that plus, you know, tenfold extra.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make financial sense in a game with a cap to just delay this. You might as well just get it done and pull the Band-Aid off and be done with it.
I think the one big problem here is there's only 8 starting quarterbacks making $30 million or more a year, with Russell Wilson being at the top at 35. So him asking for 45, yeah, it's a giant leap for still an unproven guy getting off that rookie contract. So I can understand why the, you know, the Cowboys don't want to give him everything he's asking for, but there's probably some room for negotiation in there after the season. Maybe they'll settle at $39 million or $40 million per year.
Yeah, right, someone was saying, you know, like let's be smart. Let's start it at like $38-39 million and see if we can make a deal happen here. You know, hopefully Dak would be smart enough to realize, like, hey, you know, if they meet me somewhere in the middle, I mean, that's how you negotiate, mm-hmm. right? You start high and you expect to come down. So, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me for them to continue to wait, because it's just going to hurt them in the long run if this is really the guy they want to be their future.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the elephant in the room. If we're looking at Dallas, Andy Dalton, who came over from Cincinnati, is now the backup. Why wouldn't you just potentially – put him right into that starting spot? It's not like he's sat anywhere. And to his credit, first of all, he's a Texas guy. After playing at TCU, he spent a couple years playing at Cincinnati, where they actually were able to make runs deep in the NFL. In the last 2 years, the guy's had to spend his time somehow uninjured and running like a scalded whippet because his O-line can't block. And he still has made some of the best passing numbers I've seen in a long time. So why in the world do you pick up another starting quarterback that can play right in and not just swing him straight into the spot?
No, I didn't. I think in this day and age, it's all about having insurance at quarterback. That's the one position that if it goes down, you're screwed. So you got to have a guy who's starting caliber. Essentially, you pay them to be able to step in on a moment's notice in case your starter goes down. So it definitely provides some training camp intrigue to see, can he outplay them for that starting job? I don't see him taking it away from Dak, who's the interim starter after a few seasons. But it's certainly going to improve Dak having another guy who previously started coming in to take his job. So it's only going to help both of them.
Okay, but let's be honest with that, though. I mean, you've got Andy Dalton, and again, starting quarterback. If he comes out and he outperforms Dak, I mean, great grand, wonderful. They just spent $31 million on Dak.
Yeah.
$31 million. Are they really going to start Andy Dalton over Dak, even if he outplays him?
Do you think there's any – I mean, in a normal situation, I wouldn't even – this wouldn't even cross my mind, but we're talking about Jerry Jones. So is there any chance that Jerry Jones brought in Andy Dalton as like a gambling pick or something like that? Like, hey, you know, I'm going to bring in another starter. Like, I'm going to like call my bluff, basically, that maybe, maybe Dak did call his bluff and with this whole tag situation. But I mean, is there any chance that Jerry thought, hey, if I bring in another quote unquote starting caliber guy, that maybe it'll put, you know, a little bit of heat on Dak and, you know, cause him or make him think twice about holding out? I don't know. What's your thoughts on that, Matt?
Honestly, I think it's one of those things that Jerry Jones has the ability to kind of do whatever he wants, and he potentially could just throw him in. I thought this was kind of a shape up or ship out moment.
Yeah.
You, you had the option at Cam Newton. Obviously, you passed up on that. Whether you, you know, called up to Boston to kind of talk about that first, or if you just kind of kept it in your back pocket. But you could have picked up Cam. There are several people that can. Heck, you could go out and pick up Kaepernick right now if you really wanted to. But
see, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I don't know if Kaepernick can still throw a ball or not. You know, I saw the workout, but if he can still play, that's the thing. Cam not, or Kaepernick would
he's
probably
not game tested. But
right, yeah, but either Cam or Kaepernick would fit into their system. You know, to me, I mean, yeah, and he's had to run his butt off because their O-line's been terrible. But you know, if you want a mobile quarterback, honestly, Cam or Kaepernick would fit. You know, if that goes down with injury, you want a guy that's similar. You don't want it to reinvent your offense. So that probably would have been a smarter move, as much as you guys all know my feelings about Cam Newton. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that would have been a much smarter move, you know, and probably the decision I would have made if I was Jerry. But again, I don't think
certainly could have probably gone a lot of different ways on this.
Yeah. So I mean, we'll see what the season holds, you know, and if there's any pressure. I don't know if Dak's feeling any pressure or not, but that's the issue. When you have a you know, and Dalton's not the most loved guy in the world, so it's not like he's a, you know, a number one draft pick type situation. But, I mean, you know how it is. If you come out of the gate and you struggle at all, fans turn on you quick, and, you know, you start getting those boos and stuff like that. When you got another guy sitting there that has proven that he can win ball games, and he's just sitting on the bench. If they come out slow, then the pressure might really, really be on Dak, because then he's screwed. Because now, you know, now he doesn't have a long-term deal. He's either got to perform his butt off this year, or he's in trouble. It's really a make-or-break year, in my opinion.
Agreed. Okay, with that, let's go ahead and drop the yellow flag, give our sponsors a moment to talk, because we appreciate them supporting us, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to the Sports Talk Garage podcast. Again, this is Matt with our co-hosts, David and John. And start of the episode, we talked a lot about what's going on with COVID around college athletes, talked a little bit about Dak. Let's move with the NFL a little bit more. I kind of mentioned Cam Newton, and he's at the Patriots now. Did anybody call that one?
Yeah, I think if we look back, I don't know, however many episodes when he was first released, I think I said he was going to end up with the Patriots. So I'll pat myself on the back for that one.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was, when that happened, I was fairly certain that at least one of us called that in some episode in the past. So it's not surprising, you know, like we were just saying, I think that perhaps the Cowboys or something like that probably would have been a much better option for fitting into their offense, but I don't know. That's going to be an interesting transition for Belichick, too. I mean, you've got however many years Tom's been there, and now you're going with a vastly different quarterback who doesn't know how to stay in the pocket and doesn't have the accuracy of Tom Brady and probably doesn't have the offensive prowess as far as mindset goes as Tom Brady. I don't know. I don't know if Cam's going to start or if he's going to play at all this year, if he's just going to be a nice backup. What are you guys thinking?
Oh, he's going to be the starter. So the two guys before him on roster were Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. Probably wondering who Jarrett Stidham is, because I'm not as familiar with him as most people probably aren't. This was only his second year in the NFL. He played in three games last season. He was 2 of 4 on pass attempts with 1 interception, 0 touchdowns, and a total of 14 yards as the starter.
Nice.
The other guy, Brian Hoyer, is the true definition of what I would call a journeyman. This is his 8th team, his 3rd time on the Patriots, so at least he has some familiarity with Belichick. But you know what? It's only a 1-year deal, which is the exact same what Cam has, which is essentially like a prove-it deal. If you're healthy, great. You'll probably get a big contract afterwards because he's only 31. But if you're not healthy, they only threw away a year. But what's crazy is he signed for the veterans minimum, which is a little over $1 million, with incentives up to 7.5, which is kind of mind-boggling for somebody who is a former MVP, took a team to the Super Bowl. No, he's a very talented guy, not the most accurate quarterback in the world. But yeah, I think Belichick he's amazing between Newton, running back 1 and 2, receiver 1 and 2, and tight end. They're only accounting for $21 million of the cap in 2020. So they've got plenty of money to spread around. Someone like in Dallas, where they're going to put so much money on one position and not have enough to sign other guys, Belichick can throw money to other positions of need and keep a good roster here.
I mean, for like I said, you guys know how I feel about Cam Newton, but I feel like this is his make or break year as well. You know, we're just saying this is Dak's make or break year. I feel like the same thing in a slightly different way applies to Cam because, I mean, yeah, if he has like – if you're ever going to shine in the NFL, if you can't do it under Belichick, then you can't do it anywhere. And if he fails, it's done. Game over. You're never going to hear about Cam Newton ever again. He's going to be the new – the Johnny Manziel, you know, and just ride off into the sunset. But if he succeeds, then – somebody, the Patriots, somebody's going to pay him a whole whopping slew of money.
Yeah.
So, I mean, more power to him. I just don't know if he can stay healthy. And I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see kind of what happens here, if his body can handle it. You know, it's been a long time since we've seen Cam Newton be Cam Newton. So,
it has, you know, the injury history is what really scared off a lot of teams. You know, he's got the shoulder surgeries that he's had and then that Lisfranc fracture in the foot, which cost him most of last season. Even Ron Rivera, the former Panthers coach who's now the coach of the Redskins, didn't want to sign him because he wasn't sure about his injuries and if he was actually healthy. That's pretty bad if your own coach from the past, you know, 9 or so years wouldn't take a flyer on you for a year because he was fine with the guys he had.
Well,
and you're signing for the veterans minimum. It's a true, you know, this is your year to show you can still play or else you're never starting again.
So the thing with Rivera, I think it was twofold. I think one, he was concerned about the injuries, but two, I just don't know if he felt like putting up with Cam's attitude.
Yeah, that could be.
You know, Cam is, I don't think he's ever been seen as a team player. I know the guys in the locker room in Carolina, you know, said he was a leader. I would be shocked if they said otherwise, even if he wasn't. I mean, that's just, you just say what you have to say for the media. It's a media game. But I mean, as from the outside looking in, I know the fan base surely didn't see Cam Newton as a leader. He certainly wasn't a leader during that Super Bowl run. He certainly was a leader after that Super Bowl. So I think that was a big issue. But at the same time, even though I've been dissing on Cam the last few minutes, I give Cam a lot of credit. I mean, I called it a few months ago. I said, I don't think there's any way in heck that Cam Newton is going to take a minimum deal somewhere. I don't think his pride and his attitude will allow him to do so. And, but, you know, maybe he's out of options. I don't know the situation. But, I mean, it takes, you know, a set of kahunas to go from an MVP to a guy taking a minimum contract, mentally speaking. So I give the guy props for that. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do to put your pride aside and put a chip on your shoulder and say, all right, I'm just going to go after it and get it.
But, I mean, he's in a great organization, and I fully expect him to be the starter if he's healthy. But if he's not, I mean, he's the 55th highest paid quarterback in the league. Even if he hits all of his incentives, he'll only be the 26th highest in the league. So possibility for NFL's comeback player of the year if he's healthy, especially making that little money, that's got to be the biggest bargain in the NFL for a team if he's healthy.
Oh, well, yeah.
Let's back up a step here real quick. I mean, we know what Belichick can do, but he's the head coach, right? Like, he gets the final say on things. He's taking over the whole team. But he's very good about relying on his position coaches. And let's talk about that. Offensive coordinator / quarterbacks coach is Josh McDaniels. Okay? This is a guy who started his career as a graduate assistant, senior graduate assistant at Michigan State under Nick Saban back in 99. So after that, he ends up at New England. So he's had a lot of time around the guys that like that spread and pro offense. You know, I will give Saban the fact that he can use run and gun quarterbacks compared to Belichick. But this guy has spent most of his career under spread offensive quarterbacks. And as we just said, Cam is not a spread offense. Don't run the ball, sit in the pocket. Even when it was Matt Cassell, that, you know, that was kind of up to McDaniels to get him up to speed after Brady blew his knee out. So how do we look at that as the alternative in this situation, right? I'm curious what kind of coaching pickup he's going to have to do, because his two backups are still, as David mentioned, those guys are sit in the pocket quarterbacks. Are we going to force this to change? Because as you said, I don't think Cam can walk in there and be a backup. I mean, unless he gets hurt again, there's no way. He'd be an interesting changeup. You know, it's kind of like the Baltimore Ravens having RG3. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to watch what McDaniels is going to do. I think that's something we haven't mentioned that's going to be an important factor.
Well, I always thought maybe like some team, whoever assigned him, would treat him more like, you know, Hill down in New Orleans, a guy that could throw the ball, that's athletic, that could, you know, you could do a lot of trickery type plays with him, get him into offensive in different ways. I mean, the dude's physically he's a massive play guy. So, you know, the quarterback position is certainly not the only one that he could play if he has the heart to do so. So he really has an opportunity. I mean, Belichick's, you know, the Deflategate and everything else, Spygate and everything else aside, I mean, the guy is an offensive mastery. So, you know, even if Cam's not the starter, he could find ways to work him in and utilize him as a threat. But, yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see what happens here. And, you know, if Cam can keep his attitude together, Belichick, you know, he has that reputation like, hey, it's the Belichick way or hit the door. So it's going to be a change for Cam for sure in that regard.
No doubt. Well, let's move on from NFL, and MLB's back in season, baby.
We're getting there.
It's July 23rd, slowly coming.
24th.
Training camp starts this week.
Yeah. I'm shocked, guys, honestly. You know, obviously, as a season ticket holder in Chicago, you know, I've been following this very heavily. I think I get, like, weekly updates from my ticket reps and stuff about what's going on and, you know, what's being postponed, what's been officially canceled, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm shocked that we had an agreement. I thought two times ago when there was some a proposal, I said, I think this is the final straw. If it doesn't happen this time, it's not going to happen. And that got denied. And then just randomly, it felt like a couple of days later, suddenly we had this agreement in place. So I don't know exactly what changed. But, yeah, I'm shocked. I'm happy that, you know, because my Sox might play decent ball this year, potentially speaking, and, you know, they need that field time. So I'm selfishly happy about it because my boys need experience together, playing together for hopefully a 2021 run. But, I mean, you already had several players that have said, hey, no, I'm not doing this. And you had some guys, some big guys from the very beginning that said, no, I'm not doing this, citing, you know, health concerns and things like that. But I don't know how in the world you're going to be able to keep these guys quarantined and stuff, traveling around the world, you know, not being able to see their families. I mean, they already don't get to see their families hardly at all, right? Yeah, during normal season. So, I mean, I guess they're used to that. But, I mean, we're in weird times right now, and people certainly want to be with their families during these troubling times.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned, you know, it's a compressed season. It's only 60 games starting, you know, end of July. Actually, I had tickets to go see a game before all this started. It was going to be next week, but that was canceled. I actually got my money back earlier this morning for that, which is kind of sad.
It's officially not going to happen. Braves or something?
Going down to Atlanta to see the Braves. Yeah, nice. It was going to be fun, but that's not going to happen. However, I like that the MLB is at least trying to mitigate the amount of travel these teams have to do. They're going to play 10 games against each divisional opponent and then 20 games against the corresponding geographical divisions. Like AL East will play NL East, so they're at least staying geographically close to home instead of flying to the other coast. So that'll help. It's going to be a little odd. I don't know if they're playing like 10 games in a row against an opponent. That might be a little strange seeing the same guys day after day. But it's what we get, so I'm happy to have it. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm very interested in for a game to go to extra innings when, you know, a guy starts on second in the 10th inning just to hopefully get the game done so they're not out there. You know, if the pitcher's not playing, he has to be in the stands 6 feet away from everybody. He can't fist bump people. He can't touch anybody. No hugs. So it's going to be a little odd seeing everybody spread out, but we're going to have some baseball, which will be nice.
I mean, what's weird about that, though, is, like, when it comes to the guys not playing that particular game, I mean, other sports, you know, I'm thinking, like, I'm looking over there at the European Premier League, like, yeah, they're obviously playing in empty stadiums, which some markets have said that they're thinking they may be allowed to, like, 25% fans. I don't see that happening. It'll be really interesting from a season ticket holder, you know, if they're trying to push tickets on season tickets, you know, on the holders of that, or what they're going to do from a monetary standpoint, because obviously they can't honor my seat. No. You know, I can't say 6 feet away. If, you know, it's just not going to, you know, work out that way. But I just don't understand why. I mean, these guys in the Premier League and stuff like that are playing together. They're with each other. They're on the sidelines. They're hugging. They're fist bumping. Nobody's wearing masks, things like that. Like, the EPL officials and, like, you know, timekeepers, things like that are wearing masks, but, you know, none of the players are, the referees aren't, things like that. So I don't see why it should be any different. But I don't know. Maybe it's just because of the lack of quarantine.
Could be. And there might be a point where some guys just end up, you know, rooming together for a while, and guys who are single and don't have families, it might be a little easier for them. For other guys who do have families, they might just, you know, rent an apartment and all stay together for a couple of weeks. I don't know, but I can't imagine that's going to be, essentially.
It's going to be a weird year. And then, you know, obviously with expanded playoffs, things like that, you know, it goes back to that question we had a few weeks ago, like, do you put an asterisk on this? But I mean, it's going to be all about who gets hot here. You know, we've had teams in the past that have started slow and have worked their way back into a wild card or even to win a division. But that's not going to be the case this year, which might actually vote well for my White Sox. It seems like a lot of times we start hot, and then, you know, come July, we're dead in the water. So, hey, maybe this will work out well for me here. I don't know.
But, well, hopefully, hopefully teams get a little more hyped up playing against their, you know, divisional opponents, the guys that they really can't stand, and that's going to be the majority of games here. So maybe it'll bode well for your White Sox.
It'll be interesting, too, like, what comes out of this from a fan perspective. I mean, baseball's in a weird spot right now. You know, it took them a long time to recover from steroids and stuff like that, and they finally got some mojo back, and then they have, you know, the whole Astros cheating, you know, sign-stealing crap going on. So there's already this negative light, and then you have this back and forth between these millionaire players and these billionaire owners, and they're all pissing and moaning. And it's like, all right, guys, just, there's people out there with real problems. Just shut up and play baseball already. So, I mean, they're in a weird spot from a fan perspective. Yeah, the diehards will always be there, but, you know, they got to play their cards very carefully right now to make sure they don't piss off the casual fan. And, yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, normally we're playing 162 games. You know, will fans like this shortened, you know, where games matter a whole heck of a lot more? You know, will this drive further changes in baseball games and things like that in seasons? And normally we would, you know, if you went to a bar in Chicago and said, yeah, we should shorten the MLB this season, someone would probably kick your butt. But that mentality may very well change in the world of COVID-19 and what the future holds.
Good. Well, you mentioned about, you know, the diehard fans will always be there. Something I find very interesting is the average age of the MLB fan is now 57, according to a recent article from MSN, which is up from 50 in the year 2000.
Jeez,
57,
I believe it,
that's just infallible. That's your average age of fans. I mean, baseball, maybe this will force them to be a little more innovative and do something to get the younger generation interested in baseball again, which is America's pastime.
I've always said, every time we talk about baseball in this podcast, I've always said that Major League Baseball is terrible about promoting themselves. You know, every other major sport league out there, you see it. It doesn't matter whether you're in that market or not. You know who every single superstar in the NFL is. You know who every single NBA superstar is. Baseball sucks at that. I mean, they, other than like some random advertisements, paid advertisements that companies are putting on, you don't ever see, you know, Mike Trout showing up in a Charlotte market or something like that. It just doesn't happen. Unless you're in a market, you don't see baseball, period. And then when you are in a heavy market, you really only see and hear about the players in your own market, even on like the national scale. So baseball, I don't understand why they've never figured that out, that you know, you don't, it just, they don't promote themselves. They don't do anything to glorify their superstars like other leagues do, and they need to. And that's probably why, in the world of social media and everything else, why their average fan is 57 freaking years old. And, you know, they're going to lose. They're going to be the new NASCAR if they don't, like, start shaping up here and realize that, hey, you gotta keep your hardcore fans happy, but you still got to do something to, like, try to bring in new fans.
Yeah.
And whether that means shortening games down or whatever you got to do something.
Agree. Totally agree there.
So, I mean, you know, I like going to a game and spending 4.5 hours at a baseball game any day of the week, as long as it's not 30 to blow. But I'm not the normal person. I mean, and people that are younger than us, 10, 15 years younger than us, they don't have the, you know, unless they just grew up playing baseball and just happen to have a love for it because of, you know, a parent or something took them and it's just part of their tradition. If they didn't grow up and be one of those select percentages of people, they're not going to go to a baseball game and sit there for four hours. It's just not happening.
I got to say, you know, I'm perfectly fine going to a baseball game, but there's something different about it watching it on TV. It's a little too slow and it's just not a lot of excitement. But if I'm going to a game, I'm all for it. But I can't just sit down and watch 3 hours of a baseball game on TV and just, okay, it's done. Great, that was exciting. Yeah, I
mean, I'm the same way. Like, if it's my team playing, yeah, I can sit there and watch it on TV all day. But, you know, like, Sunday night baseball and stuff, like, even when it's a big rivalry game, I'm probably not going to watch that game. And it just doesn't bring me that excitement. Whereas, you know, on NFL Sunday, you know, obviously I'm going to watch the Bears play, but then as soon as the Bears are off, I'm going to turn to the next channel. I'm going to pull up Red Zone or whatever. I'm going to watch this until it goes off.
Yep.
Baseball just doesn't. And I think that goes back to they don't, if you knew that the casual fan knew that the greatest baseball player in the world is going to be playing on Sunday night, you might tune in for that because, you know, this is like seeing Jordan of baseball playing, but they don't advertise it like that.
True. Well, and I'm curious how baseball card sales go at this point. I'd love to get a stat on that because, you know, I think that used to be the big pastime. If you guys remember as kids, we used to trade baseball cards around. We had those kinds of heroes going. And NFL was doing the same thing, but it's still – those cards are still known as baseball cards.
They are. And, you know, kind of funny story. So I just recently moved, and I came across a good portion of my baseball cards. And I had way more than I remembered from collecting them as a kid. And I started flipping through them, and I have some cool baseball cards. They're probably not worth a whole lot, but it brought back a lot of memories of collecting those when I was young. And I was like, my wife was like, "Do you want to get rid of those?" I was like, "No, I'm holding on to them." There's something sentimental about having those baseball cards. Today's generation, they probably don't even know what baseball cards really are, other than like a collector's item that are worth a lot of money in a store.
That's because they know what Pokemon cards are, not baseball cards.
It's funny though. I had the same situation. Like a year or so ago, I was cleaning out a storage room and I found like several books, you know, those books with the sleeves and stuff packed full of baseball cards. And like Frank Thomas, if you're ever listening to this
big
podcast,
hurt,
big hurt.
I knew, you know, growing up a Sox fan and a Braves fan, I knew I always loved Big Hurt, but apparently I didn't realize until I started looking through this book how much. I swear I've got like 80 of all different. I'm like, I don't recall any of this, like ever getting that. I don't know. I don't think I ever purposely did it, but apparently if I, you know, we used to go to each other's house and you do trades and stuff. Like, hey, I'll trade you these cards. Apparently I traded everything for Big Hurt cards essentially. So yeah, I mean, it brought back good memories and certainly I'll keep them forever and pass them down to whoever wants them at some point. But yeah, I mean, baseball has law. I mean, we are on the young side of the normal baseball fan now, and that's scary because we're not getting any younger, boys. So.
Well, very cool, guys. I think that was a great episode. Got a lot of good information in there. Final thoughts, anybody?
Nah, man, Formula One's kicking off this Sunday. I'm literally counting down till free practice in Austria. So looking forward to that. Premier League kicked up. My Tottenham Spurs actually won a game.
Something
I don't know.
To care about.
I think it's the first game we've won in the year of 2020. So, yeah, that was nice. I was a little shocked. But, Yeah, it's been nice, even though they pumped in some fake crowd noise. You know, it's been interesting to watch all the games, and looking forward to baseball, looking forward to the MLS tournament. Basketball, you know, normally I don't get too much into basketball until playoff time. But this is going to be, it's going to be fun right now. A lot going on.
Yeah, can I just say ditto? I mean, it's going to be nice holiday weekend, long weekend. Definitely going to find a pool somewhere. Don't really know where yet. We get to spend some time outside. But yeah, I'm probably going to tune in for part of the, maybe not all the pre-practices, at least for the race on Sunday. Other sports back, which is wonderful. So looking forward to a short work week and nice long weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think I'm much different. We'll see. I know that it's not the same as it used to be with Rona around, but you know, you used to have people you could go hang out with them at their house and play and go swimming or whatever, and that's obviously not for safety issues. That's not something that you're going to see a lot of. I've seen a lot of people either canceling, or you need to wear a mask the entire time you're here, or you know, and I just, it's just one of those things. I think if you see parties that way, you're just going to end up staying at home, but or visiting with family that you're already in contact with. So it's, you know, it's, I think it's just going to be a relaxing weekend. I think I've got some grass to cut and, you know, watch some of the fireworks that'll go off downtown or something from a distance. So enjoy a good beer over that and be a great weekend, right, guys?
Make the most of it.
Sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and bid adieu on episode 43, The Comeback, and we'll see everybody next week.
Later, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to have your sports-related question or comment featured on the show, please email us at sportstalkgarage@gmail.com. Also, if you want to keep up to date with us outside of the show, please follow us on Twitter at sportsgaragepod. If you enjoy the show, please drop us a 5-star review and subscribe if you want to hear more. So for Chris back in the studio, David and Matt, I'm John, and we are the Sports Talk Garage.